Hello and welcome to the very seasonal and gift-laden 10th edition of Culture with me, Robert Bound, where we're very nearly at Christmas. And seeing as you've been very good, boys and girls, and put up with us for the last 9 weeks, we've got something a bit special for you this week. We'll be getting some Christmas recommendations from Simon Prosser of Hamish Hamilton and Penguin, who's joining me in the studio. We'll also be enjoying a couple of mince pies and large glasses of mulled wine with Tom Hodgkinson, author of The Idler, as we enjoy a Christmas event at his Idler Academy in London.
The joke was that this is an anti-progressive educational establishment, and here you're going to learn Latin and grammar and all the old-fashioned subjects taught in the old-fashioned ways, apart from the cane, of course.
We'll also be pottering along to the Christmas walk in Hudson, upstate New York, with our reporter, Anne-Marie Gardner.
They close the streets down to traffic, all the shops are decorated for Christmas, you've got people walking around with reindeer ears on their heads and Santa hats.
And from Finland, the home of Christmas, we'll be getting some special independent recommendations from Stupido Records in Helsinki.
Independent record store, we sell a lot of local stuff, a lot of CDs, and of course nowadays a lot of vinyl as well.
All that plus a special Midori House session and chat from We Have Band. That's here on Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. Well, it wouldn't be a proper seasonal Christmas show without a bit of music, and so recently we invited We Have Band into Midori House to do a little seasonal session for us. They decided first to cover E17's classic Stay Another Day.
Stay now. Baby, if you got to go away, don't think I can take the pain. Won't you stay another day? Oh, don't leave me alone like this. Won't you say it's the final kiss? Won't you stay another day? Don't you know we've come too far now, just to go and try to throw it all away? Thought I heard you say you love me and that your love was gonna be here to stay. I've only just begun to know you, and all I can say is won't you stay just one more day? Baby, if you got to go away, don't think I can take the pain. Won't you stay another day? Oh, don't leave me alone like this. Don't you say it's the final kiss. Won't you stay another day? I touch your face while you were sleeping and hold your hand, don't understand what's going on. Good times we had return to haunt me, though it's for you all that I do seems to be wrong. Baby, if you got to go away, don't think I can take the pain. Won't you stay another day? Oh, don't leave me alone like this. Don't you say it's the final kiss. Won't you stay another day?
Stay. Baby, if you got to go away, I don't think I can take the pain. Won't you stay another day?
Stay.
Oh, don't leave me alone like this.
Well, that was We Have Band, who played a festively themed session for us here at Midori House. For this Christmas special of Culture with me, Robert Bound, we'll be hearing more from them later. But thank God I'm not in the studio on my own right now. Although, that's what it says in the script, but we'll see actually at Christmas time how we feel about that. I'm hot toddy in hand and paper crown on head. And just across the desk from me is Simon Prosser, publishing director of Hamish Hamilton and Penguin. Merry Christmas. Thanks for coming in.
Merry Christmas to you too, in advance.
In advance, exactly. Now, I wanted to ask. What Christmas is like in the Kensals with the Prossers. What sort of event is it? Are you away for Christmas? Are you home for Christmas? Is it sort of decking the halls with bells of holly, or are you sort of vacating the premises?
Well, after much debate about where we might go in the world, we eventually ended up deciding we'd go somewhere else in London. So we're actually spending Christmas in Chelsea at my mother-in-law's, which is fantastic, actually. It's a bit like going on holiday. But that was after going through all the other possible options and realising they all required vast effort and organisation, which we have failed to do. So
it's quite nice, a London holiday within London.
I love it. And Christmas in London is great. It's so much quieter and you can get around easily and actually enjoy the city a lot. So, yeah, I'm very happy with that.
I always quite like that idea of like using the tube, like Betjeman might have done, using the Metropolitan line or something as if it were an airline, you know, and finding exotic things at the other end of it. And so that's what you'll end up in Sloane Square or the environs thereof.
Exactly.
And toddle down the King's Road.
Exactly. Walk in Hyde Park and
perfect.
Go up to the V&A and probably spend a certain amount of time eating.
We hope so.
Yeah.
And how long is Christmas? Because we always kind of go, well, Christmas is this, and I always think of it as about a week.
Yeah.
Of stuff.
Yeah.
In one place, possibly, if you're lucky.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Maybe not, depending upon, obviously, who your in-laws are.
Exactly.
Are, and all the rest of it. But is that what happens to you? Is this like a week thing, or is it like a day thing?
I think it's going to end up being about 4 days, really. I think if you're going to celebrate it, you might as well go for it.
Yeah.
And then once you've decided that, then I think, you know, the more red and white and jingly and gold-starred things and stuffed animals and all of that, the more you can have, the better, really. Why not?
Have you been sort of attending children's Christmas carols or nativities? Has that happened yet?
It has happened. I've been a little bit remiss.
Okay. So you have.
I've been there in spirit.
All right.
Put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
my son's just been suspended from school this morning, so actually.
Oh my God.
Carol service for him.
Maybe I feel like Simon's son. I feel like I'm about to get suspended as well. Oh, God. Anyway, well, by Christmas, that will have all worn off, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
What happens in that situation? Do you have to remind him that Father Christmas only visits good boys?
I haven't tried that yet, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll have a word about it later. Definitely.
And it's pretty difficult to buy, presumably it's quite difficult to buy you a gift. A lot of books obviously are sold at Christmas, I'm sure. 3/4 of book sales, or at least 1/2 of book sales throughout the year, are probably done in the month up to Christmas. But if there's anything that you already didn't have, what would be on your wish list for Christmas?
On my wish list for Christmas that I didn't have, I actually saw a book in a catalogue from that wonderful German publisher, Steidl, and it was a very limited edition, I think 3-volume, boxed set of William Eggleston photographs. I think someone had gone through the archive and picked out like hundreds of fantastic photographs and put them together in this limited edition. So I think if I could realistically ask someone for a gift that probably costs about £1,000, then that's absolutely what I would have. I think he's an amazing photographer. I never tire of looking at his images, so that would make me very happy.
And is Christmas one of those times where you do actually get to catch up on some of the reading that you have to do professionally in order, you know, to sort of always be looking ahead? Is it a chance for you to actually sort of indulge in some guilty pleasures books?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely, definitely. So a couple of things I'm really looking forward to myself. I'm halfway through Michelle Houellebecq's book, new novel, The Map and the Territory. Absolutely love it, but haven't had a chance to finish it. And I've got a copy of Haruki Murakami's IQ84, which I'm really looking forward to getting into.
Yeah, my friend reviewed that for us, actually, and it was one of those awful kind of commissions where it's a sort of 1,500-page book. It was like a sort of 80-word review, and I felt very sorry for having to, you know, do the pound per word breakdown on that.
Yeah.
It's not probably the best.
No.
But I wonder always whether people that read professionally and edit professionally and publish professionally, whether they're faster readers than everybody else. And I wonder whether do you do the diagonal reading thing to
I'm
scan
not sure
through
I know
books?
What that is.
Well, I was told that there was this thing where maybe Katie was telling us about this, our producer, who's frowning through the glasses. Mm. I clearly made that up. Is doing a diagonal read of a page where you you sort of read
or from bottom to
eight
top.
Key words or something.
Right,
from,
okay.
Yeah, from, I guess from top to bottom.
Top left to bottom right.
Yeah, it sounds
I guess.
Very strange. Very sort of scanning things.
No, I've never tried that.
Okay, good. That, well, that's all right. Listeners will still have faith in the UK publishing industry.
What I find is that it's very hard to read something that's good very fast and you wouldn't want to. So you start off at speed, and as soon as you realise something is really good, you're getting something out of it, or you're trying to figure something out, then you slow right down. And I think that, you know, at that point, you have to give the book some kind of respect. It's a bit like, I don't know what the word is, it's a bit like dating or something. You sort of, you know, you encounter someone new, you get talking, and then you either get drawn in and interested and fascinated, at which point you can relax, slow down, and really try and understand that person, in this case, the book. I think I've been doing this business too long and I confuse people and books. So, like a night you never want to end, exactly. So that's what I think. And, you know, you do get very good at speed reading, but, you know, just like you probably do for magazines, it's, and you do probably pick up keywords and recognise, you know, chunks of language that go together, and, you can speed up. But
yeah, and I wonder about that. I mean, you know, it was always, it's one of those things, as we say, you know, maybe half of books are sold in the run-up to Christmas, but I wonder how many are read. And obviously there's lots of cookbooks.
A lot.
And you want a photography book from Steidl in your stocking. I wonder sort of how much of it sort of gets read. And I wonder after Christmas, if we consider it to be a week, how far through the book lots of bookmarks sort of are. And I suppose it's one of those things. I suppose, you know, even at Christmas, the book has to sort of fight for attention with lots of things. Is that the same in your house, or is it a little bit more?
I think it probably is, actually. And we're very, you know, I'm also married to a publisher. We're very hard people to buy books for, but people sometimes attempt to do it.
It's a nightmare, imagine.
It is really, yeah. I mean, if someone really knows us well, they'll figure out something that we'll, you know, one or other of us or both of us will love and that we couldn't possibly get our hands on. But the likelihood is, if it's something we really wanted, we probably would have found our way to it. So they tend to buy us other
things. So the way to your heart is rarity.
Probably is, yeah. Or maybe something because I publish very much books with words rather than pictures, probably something with pictures I would love.
And as we talk about this, I'm getting a picture in my head of the Idler Academy. Actually, which is a friend of yours, isn't he? Tom Hodgkinson
and his partner Victoria, and it's their wonderful, I don't know what you call it. It is an academy, but it's also a shop and a coffee shop, a bookshop and a coffee shop, and also a great event space and a general sort of hangout zone for an assorted bunch of I guess sort of, you know, West London types who don't go to offices, and quite a few writers and some ex-models and some quilters and ukulele players. And it's a great, great place if you're ever passing by, on just opposite the Westbourne pub down on Westbourne Grove in West London.
I hope that everyone's listening to that has listed those sorts of people and is at pains to try and recreate this in their own living room, create their own literary salon or their own salon of idleness.
Yeah, it's pretty much what Tom has done.
Well, my producer Katie and I went down to the Idler Academy to visit Tom Hodgkinson and have a bit of a Christmas knees up and discover what they do on Christmas.
Hello.
Come in, sit down.
Tonight we've got Professor Ronald Hutton, the Idler's favourite historian. He's the head of history at Bristol University, very distinguished academic, and author of loads of wonderful books. One of his specialities is early modern England. But the talk he's doing, he's also an expert on Christmas and the history of Christmas. So what we're going to have tonight, and I'm really looking forward to, is a talk about the true origins of Christmas, what Christmas really means. And to accompany that, we've got the medieval music from Princes in the Tower, a trio of early music troubadours. So it's going to be a really fun evening.
What I'm going to do is, I'm going to set up the traditional history of Christmas festivities, as it was told by the lad, and then reveal...
The idea of the Academy came from doing events at festivals, really. We were invited a couple of years ago to do our own tent at Port Elliot Festival. So we thought this would be great fun. We got loads of our writers to give talks. But we gave it as a kind of a half gag, an educational angle. Mm-hmm. So it's called the Idol of Academy and had a mortarboard. The joke was that this is an anti-progressive educational establishment and here you're going to learn Latin and grammar and all the old-fashioned subjects taught in the old-fashioned ways, apart from the cane, of course. But also the idea of the Academy, which is was invented by Plato, you know, one of the greatest ancient Greek philosophers, somewhere where people can come and talk about ideas and meet other people and debate and learn. And this is a process that goes on all through life. So, and as well as running the courses and the lectures and talks in philosophy and Latin and so on, we sell books and it's also a little cafe.
And I'm going to build up a positive picture of what that same scholarship tells us about the origins of the Midland Press model.
But it's really been, the idea's always been about, I suppose, trying to create a life outside of a sort of wage slavery, a sort of, you know, dependence on the corporation or the bureaucracy. Trying to get out of having to have a boring job, perhaps get out of the sort of consumer ethic and embrace some kind of freedom or life of the mind. And in pursuing that, yes, actually, unfortunately, you end up working quite hard. On the other hand, it's stuff that we've chosen to do and it's fun and we sort of hope it's worthwhile too. We have the deliberate intention of creating a convivial place. We call it a coffee house and bookseller. Coffee house, referring back to the old 18th century coffee houses, which really were places where people hung out and met each other and talked to each other. So that's the crucial difference between our coffee house and somewhere like Starbucks. Starbucks are generally quite sort of lonely places.
Everyone's on their laptops, aren't they?
Exactly. You go to refuel, check your emails, and you're on your laptop, and off you go. And this is much more sort of lo-fi. And people, it's quite small, people really do meet each other. So, you know, you come in and if I know two people, I'll introduce them to each other. Someone who's browsing at the shelves will overhear a bit of conversation and, you know, throw in their own comments. It's great during the day having a shop because the door's open, you know, it's very democratic. Anyone can wander in. You don't even have to buy anything, although we do try to encourage that. Obviously, a large part of the people who we try to attract here are locals, people who live around the corner. But yeah, there's definitely a sort of community vibe, and the Residents Association locally have their Christmas party here, for example. So it's very much open for local artists to show work, for local people to have their meetings here and so on.
And that was us enjoying a little bit of a Christmas sneeze up at the Idler Academy. You're with the Culture Show, the Christmas special of the Culture Show on Monocle 24 with me, Robert Band, and I'm in the studio with Simon Prosser. No more dulcet tones than Simon Prosser.
Thank you.
Publishing director of Hamish Hamilton and Penguin. and so your friend put up a good fight there at the Idler Academy. It sounds like a pretty amazing place to spend Christmas, actually. I think we could have bedded in for the whole duration there.
Yeah, well, if you check out downstairs in the basement, there is it's like the perfect sort of bachelor pad, actually. It's of a certain kind, of a sort of bohemian bachelor pad. It's a very small single bed in a low-ceilinged room with a couple of chairs and a table and an ashtray and a little cocktail cabinet and some great books. So
that sounds pretty good.
Snug.
It does sound. It sounds like a life sentence or a bachelor pad. I'm not quite sure which. And Tom himself has, I think, got a book out at the beginning of January, hasn't he?
Yeah, Tom's book, Brave Old World, which is a year of husbandry, good husbandry, which is really the art of fine living, the art of good living. It's a sort of medieval idea. And it's a January to December book about how to good husband your life.
I think we should also get some tips from that. I think the newspapers, we know what's going to happen in January. The newspapers will be full of diet tips, lots of usages of the word holistic, probably, and all these sorts of things. So Tom's book might not be a bad place to start, taking it from a slightly old-fashioned ideal.
Well, there are chapters called things like Brew Your Own Beer, for example.
Okay. We might be heading in the wrong direction once again with that.
Possibly, yes.
But then if he needs to sort of crash at his office and it's all it is a single bed and a cocktail cabinet, then he's only got himself to blame.
There you are.
And maybe you can give us some other quick tips for what you're looking forward to reading in the new year, what you've got on your roster.
Well, what's coming up in January, actually, which I think a lot of Monocle readers and listeners will be excited about too, because he's very much very much been along for the Monocle ride in lots of ways, is Alain de Botton's new book, Religion for Atheists, which is a rather wonderful book about what happens when you give up God. So lots of people don't believe in a deity. But Alain's observation is really that in giving up God, you often give up lots of other very useful and good and beautiful things, including thousands of years of collective wisdom, sense of community, beautiful paintings, incredible spaces like cathedrals. And what he's arguing for, I think, is a kind of a secular space in which you can, in various ways, recreate or reclaim the things that you give up if you've given up on God. It's a
sounds like a fascinating idea. It's a tough, but it's a tough thing to sort of fill that void, right?
Yeah.
What would it be? Like the world's greatest bookshop? I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe it would be.
In my case, it might be. But it might, for example, be a temple for atheists. So Alain was recently in Brazil and sent me a photograph of somebody who inspired by the same philosopher that Alain was inspired by, called Auguste Comte. And someone in Brazil had actually gone as far as creating a very beautiful temple for atheists that had many of the same architectural features and the same feeling as you might have in a religious temple, but this one was for atheists.
That sounds like an amazing concept, like a temple for those that don't believe in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, not nihilists, I suppose, but you don't believe in God.
No. And equally, you could apply it to how do you, you know, when you go to church on a Sunday, you often meet people who you wouldn't otherwise meet. What could replace that? Perhaps a restaurant where everyone was seated collectively in a sort of communal way, and the waiters actually were schooled in the art of conversation and might be able to actually try and get people to talk to each other. So that's another example.
There is a sort of, I mean, Alain's the School of Life as well. Yeah. There's a similar that idea, and I suppose like Tom's book about sort of a year of you know, decent husbandry. Yeah. There's obviously been a trend for a while for this sort of the more philosophical end of, we can call it self-help.
Living, really,
we don't want to kind of talk our way into a corner with the phrase self-help, but that idea of sort of the philosophical end of it. It's an interesting idea, isn't it? That there's, I suppose it's a sense of urbanity, being sort of closed in on yourself a bit and wanting to sort of escape it and, you know, I suppose, like open up the mind
definitely.
A little bit and not have to subscribe to all the things that maybe we were told to, but it's a temple for atheists sounds like a.
Definitely.
I don't know whether it's a New Year's resolution coming so soon after Christmas. It seems a bit harsh, doesn't it?
To then
go, oh, by the way, we're opening a temple for atheists.
Well, each to their own.
And what about New Year's resolutions, Simon Prosser? It seems like everything's sorted, apart from getting Kensal Rise Library
exactly
safe and sound, because that's what we were talking about last time.
Yes, the latest on that is that the community won the right to a High Court appeal, which is amazing. It's gone to appeal. The case was heard, along with several other libraries in Brent, and we're waiting for the judge to pronounce on that, which will be in the next few days. And meanwhile, a rather wonderful pop-up library is going outside that gets bigger and bigger and has many volunteers and... It's a lot of fun. It's really, really pulled the community together, actually, and everyone's met people they wouldn't otherwise have met. And, you know, whatever happens, it's had that effect, which is a really interesting example of how you can live in an area for years and not really, actually, if you don't want to, you don't necessarily have to talk to anyone. But and then you realise when you do meet people, actually, a lot of them are really worth talking to.
And presumably, and a library might be one of those temple for atheists that we might just be
looking for
in the future. The more of these places that close, the better, I suppose.
Definitely.
Simon Prosser, the best voice literally in the world of books. Thank you for joining us. You're listening to the Christmas special of Culture with me, Robert Bound. We're back with more seasonal goodness after this.
Avant-garde.
I want to set up something new, not copying somebody.
Basically, we just wanted to express ourselves and don't think too much of other people.
Sometimes it needs to push a boundary.
To see the smoke clearing, but it's a lifetime thing, you know.
You actually have to find something to truly challenge, and that's an avant-garde.
Watch it on www.theavantgardediaries.com.
For a complete briefing on the business of design, join us for Section D. Every week, Monocle's design editor, Hugo MacDonald, brings you the world of design in a perfectly formed package, looking at architecture, industrial design, fashion, retail, and graphics. Monocle 24's Section D brings the world of design to you, the Monocle listener. That's Section D, premiering every Tuesday on Monocle 24 at 1900 London time, here on Monocle 24. and also available on our Timeshift player at monocle.com and on iTunes.
Welcome back to the Christmas special of Culture with me, Robert Bounds. Now, I think it's time for another song. Here's a Christmas treat from this year's stock of Christmas records. Friend of the show, Emmy the Great, has released an album with her partner in crime, Tim Wheeler, and this is Christmas Moon. That was Christmas Moon by Emmy the Great and Tim Wheeler from their Christmas album. You are listening to the Christmas special of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Still to come in part two, we're going to be taking a Christmas walk in Hudson, getting some seasonal recommendations from the land of Christmas, Finland, and hearing about Auckland's art scene at a Christmas exhibition opening in the city. And we'll be chatting to We Have Band, who performed a seasonal Midori House session for the show. This is the Christmas special of Culture with me, Robert Band. It's time to start moving around the world now in our cultural Christmas celebrations. Hudson, New York, is well known among designers, architects and set designers for its antiques. But in the last few years, Hudson has become a magnet for musicians and is becoming known as a music town. So it's not surprising that this year's Winter Walk has more musicians than ever before. Monocle correspondent Anne-Marie Gardner walks the Hudson Winter Walk to scout the local talent.
We're in Hudson, New York. Hudson is a two-hour drive outside of Manhattan. It's the annual Winter Walk, but this year it's different because there is more music and they're expecting 15,000 people to be walking the streets. They close the streets down to traffic. All the shops are decorated for Christmas. You've got people walking around with reindeer ears on their heads and Santa hats, and there'll be music in about 15 minutes. This is going to start.
I'm Gary Shiro. I'm the executive director of the Hudson Opera House, a multi-art center in Hudson, New York. Well, this is the 15th year of this annual celebration. We sometimes refer to it as a mile-long party. All of Warren Street is closed from Front Street to 7th Street, and it is filled with performers, with musicians, costumed characters, with all sorts of surprise things that we know nothing about, and the crowds have just grown each year. And last year, we think somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 people were here. The impact for shops and for restaurants and for tourism and Hudson in general is very significant. A part of what feels different for folks this year, as Hudson transforms, so does Winter Walk, and Hudson has really become a music destination. There's every kind of music out on the street that you can imagine tonight, from classical to world, folk, funk, blues. It's a great opportunity to just kind of take in all the liveliness.
I'm Dan Seward. I own John Doe Books and Records in Hudson, New York. I can't believe how much music there is this year. It seems like there's 700 acts going on. There's dance, there's elves, there's saxophone Santa Claus. Check out Saxo Claus. That seems like it's going to be a hot act. You need flavor in this town.
You're in a band called Bunny Brain since the 1980s. So why aren't you playing tonight?
I think it's scary for children, and I don't think you should expose that to them on a Christmas occasion or a holiday. Now, I'm being told it's a holiday occasion. Like, the word on the street is say holiday.
We're going to go see Subway Girl.
Subway Girl plays in the subway, but she also plays in clubs and in venues.
You think Saxo Santa will ever make it to New York?
I hope so.
Will ever get out of Hudson?
I could see him on Broadway, a one-man show. He's great.
So we're at Winter Walk in Hudson, New York. We've got a parade going on. It's very exciting. Now we've got Santa Claus coming in a fire truck.
My name is NYC Subway Girl, also known as Kathy Greer. I'm here at the Culture and Commerce Project in Hudson, New York. This is my first winter walk, and it's really exciting. Hudson is historically with the artists that used to be here. It's just growing and growing, and more people want to have that sort of very relaxed, unique experience of just live music. It's not all precious. It's a wonderful opportunity to perform. Any chance I can have to just perform for people is just wonderful.
It's different from year to year. There's more and more music outside on the street now. It was a flamenco guitarist. It was fine. I think they were a little loud.
Is that why you don't have music in the shop this year?
It's a great night insofar as there are lots of people who have fun, and it creates a good atmosphere in the town, and it creates a good vibe for Hudson. Retail, it's about as much as you'd normally do on a Saturday daytime. All in all, it's fine. But it happens every year that people do see something and come back.
If you want to be a girl of mine, you gotta play it pretty
well. Let's show them how to do it.
Come.
That was Anne-Marie Gardner reporting from Hudson, upstate New York. You're listening to Christmas Culture with me, Robert Bound. So the hot toddies and mulled wine have been flowing here at Midori House, but we all know the real home of Christmas is Finland. For this week's recommendations, we've been to Stupido Records in Helsinki to hear what they think people should be buying over the festive season.
My name is Alexi and we're in Stupido Shop Record Store in Helsinki, Finland. And I'm the part owner here and we have a lot of records. Stupido Shop is an independent record store. We sell a lot of local stuff, a lot of CDs, and of course nowadays a lot of vinyl as well. People ask who's the like typical Stupido customer, but I don't think there is one, because we have people aged from 13 to 85 are like normal customers. There's a lot of old junkies and then a lot of millionaires, businessmen, quite a lot of Russian tourists, quite a lot of local radio DJs and musicians and stuff. So we have like all colors of the rainbow in our customers. People are buying a lot of new stuff like Kate Bush, Tom Waits, then a lot of local bands like Regina, a Finnish band, then local hip-hop is really huge now, and then we sell a lot of vinyl, of course Radiohead and stuff, but then we like this Argentinian tango artist Melingo is huge here, and all sorts of stuff. Jazz, we have this great jazz section here. And the two newest top sellers are Kate Bush and then Regina, this Finnish band. The new Kate Bush album, 50 Feet of Snow, is it? Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge seller. People are buying music as a Christmas present quite a lot. I think, yeah, vinyl more and more each Christmas, and it's nice to see that all the young kids find vinyl as well. And yeah, of course, CD is an easy Christmas gift. It's better than a download code. We're living in a weird times here in the music business because of all the streaming service and downloading and stuff, and of course the economic situation everywhere. But I hope the physical format is still there, and I think it's kicking still. Good rule when you're buying, if just ask the clerk basically in Stupido Shop, because we can recommend a lot music. But if you know, it's easy to buy like the new Kate Bush or the new Lulu Gainsbourg, which is playing here, you should ask always. The good service is a good way to run a record shop as well. So I think at least here in Stupido, we give the customer a pile of CDs or music to listen to, and you can choose there with your own ears. There's a few good Christmas albums, like the new She and Him album, which is a Christmas album.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
And then, of course, the old school Frank Sinatra ones and Beach Boys ones. And then there's this Sufjan Stevens indie pop 5 CD Christmas box. Don't forget the Phil Spector Christmas CD or vinyl. That's a good one as well.
Those are some seasonal recommendations from Stupido Records in Helsinki. You're listening to the Christmas special of Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24.
Avant-garde.
I want to set up something new, not copying somebody.
Basically, we just wanted to express ourselves and don't think too much of other people.
Sometimes it needs to push a boundary.
To see the smoke clearing, but it's a lifetime thing, you know.
You actually have to find something to truly challenge, and that's an avant-garde.
Watch it on www.theavantgardediaries.com.
So The Entrepreneurs is Monocle's weekly business briefing. We are shining a spotlight on the people around the world who are driving innovation within their industry.
I didn't set out to become a perfumer, so it's almost an accident, which doesn't sound very business-like, but it is.
So it's not about bulls and bears, it's about small businesses, it's about the businesses you've always dreamed to set up. It's about the entrepreneurs who are daring to go out there and do it.
That's The Entrepreneurs, presented in association with Pictet, premiering every Wednesday at 1900 London time, here on Monocle 24.
And welcome back to the Christmas special of Culture with me, Robert Bound. Now, we heard at the start of the show from We Have Band, who performed a special Christmas session for us here at Midori House. And after they'd strummed a few ditties for us, I caught up with them for a quick chat. I'm here with We Have Band. That is Dee Dee, Darren and Tom. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And sounding in such fine voice.
Thank you.
It's always a bit of a weird one. Are you good at singing early in the morning or late at night? Because most people like to sort of gargle with, you know, whatever and do their thing.
I think morning's not, you're not at your best. But you can get it out, can't you?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's easier after, like, maybe a little whiskey, but you can't really do that in the morning.
Not really.
People tend to frown on it. But hey, it's Christmas time. What's wrong
do you
with
know
you?
What? This is the one time, time of year you can do it.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
We've had some people in. We've had some people in on this on a similar beat who've imbibed fairly heavily.
Right.
Really?
And I won't tell you what time of day
or who it is.
Or
who,
well, maybe.
Maybe.
We'll
all right. Some...
Or what they were drinking. Tell us nothing.
No, we've had some. We've had a lot of red wine love in the building.
Oh yeah,
there's been
some
stained floors, and that's kind of all right.
Oh yeah, we love a bit of red wine.
I tell you what, it's not great if you have that before lunch, though, is it? It's a bit kind of.
It's not
like,
no.
It's a little bit. I don't know.
Make you a bit tired.
Do you think it's a bit seedy, Tom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's making a face.
I used to work with someone who did that quite a lot.
What?
Oh no, have I just exposed them?
What? Tell us who it was, then you will.
I can't say my old boss, do you remember?
Oh, I worked with
her. She liked a glass of wine.
I worked with her in the afternoon, and she'd always have that Vimto.
Lunch
steak.
Is all right.
Yeah, but listen, she had quite a lot of red wine.
Did she have an early lunch?
Fridays was all right.
A little sort of red moustache, a guilty red moustache. Yeah. What I like about is having a band in that don't want to talk about. I love having We Have Band in because they don't want to talk about the new record or anything. They just want to talk about alcoholic former bosses. In our news, welcome to our news section, alcoholic former bosses.
She was great, I loved her. She was really great.
Let's move on.
Good fun.
Relax. I wanted to say a name.
Leave it alone.
I didn't.
We have band in performing, who have performed and are performing songs from their new album called Turnion.
Yes.
What does that mean?
What's it? The sort of power of three, generally. One plus one plus one.
The cardinal sum of one and one and one.
Oh, that's it.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Is that off Wikipedia or...?
No, it's true. It's
no,
real.
It's Google Answers or something.
Okay.
We talked about it quite a lot and it just sort of felt like it fitted the music and it was something we've and us and sort of the vibe and where we're at and what the album's about. So
now people are going to have to wait until halfway through January to hear the record, the whole record. We're going to be reviewing it in the magazine as well. But it's a bit of a departure. Your first record was dancey, rocky, kind of disco-y, rocky kind of stuff, which was great. And it was a lovely album. I remember I first heard you guys when I was on a boat in a river in Basel for the Art Basel Art Fair.
We remember
which
it.
Was Basel. Yeah, someone had to start off the dancing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
It was a very A-list turnout, wasn't it?
It was good, wasn't
yourself,
it?
Yourself, Roman Abramovich, and
Pharrell Williams. Yeah.
We always hang out together.
He danced.
Yeah.
Pharrell Williams
never
was
seen...
dancing too.
Yeah.
Only after you though. He only started dancing after you did.
And so the new album, we're told it sounds different, and I've listened to it. And it sounds lovely, and it sounds like something made of rock. Sounds like something that's been there forever, almost. How did you go about recording it? I know you've been touring a lot, touring the first record. How was this made?
With us, we've always sort of written in bits, and this was not really any different to how the first one was written. It was just we spent a little bit more time, a little bit more care. We thought a bit harder, and touring has, you know, it leaves its mark on you. And I think part of the sort of the darkness, or maybe, I don't know, the intimacy or the exposure. There's things about the record that's probably informed by the fact that we were sort of travelling around the planet for 18 months or so.
And you made the first album with the intention of kind of getting a record out and being a band almost kind of thing, rather than, you know, maybe with an eye to the future. I know a couple of you worked at a record company previous to actually being in the band.
Yeah.
How does that feel? Does that sort of set you up for a fall? Or does that set you up to know how the industry works?
It's not hurt us, I think, in terms of what we know about things. Mm. But generally, we forgot our time working quite quickly. It became much more of a thing. Almost more of a thing for other people than us. Maybe it was in our head that we'd done this, so we know certain bits, but we just left it behind and just started the band, and that was it, really. Quit our jobs and
That's big thing was always live as well. We went straight in. I mean, we did the first 2 years without a record label. In fact, we'd finished the record. We'd recorded it before we'd signed a deal. So we sort of did all of that, and we did like 130 odd gigs in 2009 and the same in 2010. So really, the live side of things was something we didn't really know anything about. I mean, of course, we go see bands, but that was really our game. So being at the label didn't really help with that. So we just learned as we went along, but it was fun.
And a lot of your... A lot of the music that we'll hear, that we're going to hear now, is harmonic. You and Dee Dee, singing together a lot as well. Is that something that bears itself out in the way that the record's made? Are you quite sort of, you all share equal parts in the sort of songwriting and recording processes as well?
Yeah, totally. I think we've I mean, you mentioned earlier on that the record sort of sounds quite, solid. It's come from a much deeper place this time. But like Thomas says, when you've been on the road, just all the things we've been through, we dug a lot deeper. And you can kind of make a choice when you're writing records. You can write about something you've seen in the street, or you can write about your deepest. And we really decided to go deep. So that's sort of how it starts. You kind of dig in yourself, and then we present things to each other and we just share things. So sometimes, one of us will start writing something, and even if it's quite personal, we spent a lot of time talking about what we felt and what we were writing about, and then everybody was kind of on board, and so other people could write lyrics. And of course, the melody and the music is something sort of not entirely different, but that's also something to itself, which we all contribute. And, you think, oh, this should sound a bit more like this or a bit more like that. So it's always input from all of us, which is really nice.
And you wrote Turney and the new album On the Road. And what's On the Road being like? I mean, what were the highlights for you, for places, particularly gigs? I mean, you've seen the world. It's a good way of seeing the world, presumably, from on stage and from taxis to hotels and all the rest of it. But what kind of stood out for you? Where were the most fun places to play?
We've had so many times, good times, in lots of different places. We enjoy going to Germany a lot. Berlin's always a lot of fun.
South America was fun, because Thomas and Dee, you two have been before.
Yeah. Just drop that one in. Yeah, that was fun.
It was amazing. It was amazing. For me, it was really special. I'd never been to South America, so it was like just great. And Australia as well.
What are they laughing about? They're laughing at you.
We're just name-dropping South America. No, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah. It's the places that were really exciting for me, because I'd never been to Australia or South America. So to suddenly go with the music you're playing was just incredible. Because you'd both been already, I think, to both places.
Miami was fun.
Yeah, Miami's fun. Did you play at Art Basel there as well?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. But did you play down on the beach?
No, we didn't. We played in a basement of the Delano.
Oh, the Delano. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's. I think we could euphemistically call that, like South America, a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's a pretty sexy hotel.
It can be very much so.
That was nice.
So you made it out alive of that.
Yeah.
I stayed there for a bit.
Yeah, that was good.
That was nice.
And who are good crowds around the world? I mean, you say Berlin's a lot of fun.
Germany.
Okay.
No, we like the Switzerland. I mean,
what? Switzerland's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And you're surprised when you go to a place and you kind of think, ooh, there might be a bit standoffish, and they really go for it.
Do you know what? Actually, everywhere, like Europe's, everywhere's, it's...
I think the music that we made with the first record, it does lend itself to people just having some fun.
Yeah, and going for it.
Going for it. And if you're going to come to We Are Banging, the chances are you're up for a little
Hopefully
bit of a dance.
Hopefully you're up for a dance, and we are.
Yeah.
And if you're dancing, if you dance, I'll dance more.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, because I hear that that's part of the rehearsal and the studio sessions, is that you get the beat going with a bit of dancing.
Yeah, right?
I don't really dance in the studio.
No, we do.
Not loads, but enough. I might dance. I probably dance.
You're lagging behind here. They do.
Yeah. I probably dance 60% or 70% more when I'm on stage, and I'm feeling it a bit more when the crowd are going for it. But so I think most gigs are a lot of fun if the crowd are enjoying themselves.
Okay. Now we've got to turn our attentions to Christmas, because you're going to play one of our favourite songs, British classics, this was a big hit when I was at school as well. I'm sure.
Same here.
What's Christmas like in all of your households? We have to go around the table. We're going to start from Dee Dee. We're going to work our way clockwise around
this
table.
Okay. Well, I'm obviously married to Thomas.
Yes.
So I spend it with him.
I can tell that by the fact you're sitting as far apart in this room as you possibly can.
Okay. Well, I am, and we go to Manchester.
Okay.
And then we go to Hereford.
We split it. For the last few years, we've done the
double on the
A440 M5 Christmas trip.
The classic.
We've done breakfast with my family in Manchester.
Okay.
And we drive to Hereford. Dinner with his family in Hereford.
Yeah.
But he's not from Hereford.
Dee Dee's family. Well, Dee Dee is obsessed with Christmas, though.
Yeah.
Are you obsessed with Christmas?
Yeah.
In a healthy way?
No.
Probably not, no.
It does spill over, but that's Christmas.
Yeah, it is. It's good. Yeah. Is this like a present thing, or is this like all the parties, or is this going home, putting your feet up?
Presents and Christmas tree decorations.
Presents and decorations.
She makes all her own decorations.
And I make cards, potato stamp cards for everybody who we ever meet. You'll get one.
Will I?
Yeah, you'll get one this year. Maybe Monocle will get one for everyone.
That was We Have Band, who played a special festive session for us here at Midori House. So that's just about all we have time for on our Culture Christmas special here on Monocle 24. Thanks very much to Tom Hodgkinson from The Idler and Simon Prosser from Penguin. Next week, we'll be glancing our eyes back over the last 10 weeks and picking our highlights for you to enjoy over the festive period. You've been listening to the Christmas special of Culture with me, Robert Bound. My producer and overall mastermind was Katie Bilboa, and my researcher was Hannah Jenkins. Have a great Christmas wherever you are in the world. We'll be having one or two drinks and then overindulging in food, family, friends, and good old-fashioned squabbles over board games. Time for one final song this week, another one from We Have Band's special Christmas Midori House session on The Culture Show. Thanks, as always, for tuning in, and Merry Christmas.
This next song is called Watertight. Thanks very much.